I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freund, and this is The Next Page. Marissa, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am terrific.
Oh, wow.
Just because, well, one of the reasons is that I'm terrific is last week, right after we recorded our podcast, I went to get essentials.
Oh, yes.
And those essentials, right. And there's actually, if people go to Macney's YouTube channel, the video that I think you posted it yesterday, but you're announcing it tomorrow. So it will be out by the time this podcast. Yep. There's a picture of the essentials that I picked up. Because they were Beak and Skiff hand sanitizer and a half gallon of Up All Night burn ice cream. Mmm, it was good.
Well,
the hand sanitizer works. Oh, yeah. No, there's a lot left. I've only had some twice since I purchased it a week ago. And
wow.
And thankfully, I don't think my grandkids, who some of them were, so full disclosure, we aren't completely social distancing from my son Mike's family because they actually lived with us for 10 days while they're 8 or 10 days when their house was being worked on. So they came over for Sunday dinner. And they didn't ask for any of that ice cream. Of course, I cheated them. We got some ice cream bars. And so I said, hey, who would like an ice cream bar, like a Klondike bar? So then they weren't going to eat my, anyways.
Strategy.
So you know what? I think tonight I don't have to go get the hand sanitizer and the ice cream. I just need to go upstairs and eat it.
Well, what a way to start the weekend.
Yeah, starting it early, right?
Oh, that's awesome.
But I also found, you know how last we were talking about all these uses for new things and creative things coming out of our crisis, because I refer to call it by its name anymore. I'm so done with it.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I've noticed is a lot of the hand sanitizers that people are making, especially those that are using distilleries, they're kind of watery.
Mm-hmm.
But if you mix it with like your Purell, it makes your Purell go longer, and it creates a little bit of a thickness to the, it's like a thickening agent to the.
Look at you.
The distillery. It works well. Fortunately, there was like no explosion or something. I've been known to do those, especially in junior high science classes. But anyways, it works great. It is kind of interesting that when I opened up the bottle of the Beak and Skiff hand sanitizer, it did smell a little bit like vodka. But anyways, or maybe I bought the wrong stuff. I'm not sure.
That's funny.
But it did say do not drink or something like that on there. So
yeah, that's important. That is
so
important.
But that's not what we're talking about today, is it?
No.
Well, it kind of was.
Like, yeah.
Kind of.
That was a decision you made.
It was a decision I made that became a turning point. We're going to talk about turning points tonight. But so the post that came out this morning, the title is somewhat strange in that it just says, who is David K. Carter? And I wrote this, one of the paragraphs in my post this morning says, if you just do a simple Google search, you're not going to find him. You have to get more specific in him, in who he was, and like a time frame. So the point that I was trying to bring out was that in May of 1860, in Chicago, Illinois, and Chicago was a really small town at the time, the Republican Party had its convention to nominate a presidential candidate for the upcoming election. And the interesting thing was that the person that was the favorite to get the nomination was Auburn's own William Seward. And what happened was at the first ballot, so the first thing that happened was the conventioneers or whatever you call them, the delegates got together. And they, the first order of business was to, somebody had put up a rule that you needed a 2/3 majority, and that was voted down, and it said, no, you just need a simple, 51% majority. So then people thought, Seward's, he's got this nailed. There's no way that Seward can't win this ballot. Well, he didn't. And others, there were others that got a lot of support. Salmon P. Chase out of Ohio, Edward Bates of Missouri, Simon Cameron from Pennsylvania, and Abraham Lincoln from Illinois. So then they did a second ballot, and what was surprising in the second ballot was that Lincoln started getting a lot closer to Seward, and the other three started losing some ground. And one of the things that people realized when they were talking was that Lincoln was everybody's second choice. So if Bates would have been your first choice, your second choice was Lincoln. If Seward was your first choice, your second choice was Lincoln. And Lincoln's campaign committee, I don't know, for a better word, I guess that's what I would call him, started talking to more and more delegates and realized that he was picking up a lot of steam. And they basically said, well, you know, if Lincoln is your second choice, come on, why don't you just choose him, because we're stuck. We're not going to get anywhere unless people move on Lincoln. So then the third ballot is called, and Lincoln is down by 1.5 votes. And there's this pause. And one of the historians says that within 10 clicks of a clock, so that must mean 10 seconds, mm-hmm. which if you think about it, the whole place goes silent when they read the ballot. This gentleman, whose name was David K. Carter, who was a delegate from Ohio, stands up and says Ohio shifts 4 of its votes from Salmon P. Chase to Abraham Lincoln. Imagine if he had never stood up. Because imagine the pressure.
Right.
You know, his own governor is in the room, and he's going to have to go back to Ohio and talk about why this lanky, homely-looking guy from Illinois is now the presidential candidate, who didn't look at all like a statesman. You know, he was really strange looking, even, you know, and he talked with a high voice, but he had the courage, he and his and three of his fellow delegates, to stand up and say, no, we're switching our vote to Lincoln. That was a turning point, not just for the election, but for our nation. Imagine where we would be as a nation without Abraham Lincoln ever being president. But it took this individual the courage to do it. And so one of the quotes that I've used for the last couple of weeks is, a crisis is an intense time of difficulty requiring a decision that will be a turning point. We came really close. We came one intense time of difficulty away from having President Lincoln, President Lincoln. And then I started thinking, so how many of these opportunities exist in our life? You know, when we are in times of difficulty, that intense difficulty is what heightens our awareness. It kind of wakes us up. It takes us, if people watch the video that got released, it takes us out of autopilot. And we now control the vehicle. You know, we're flying the plane, we're driving the car, we're not on cruise control anymore. And when we're in those heightened times of urgency, if I can call it that, we see things that we don't see. But when we get to this point of intense difficulty, we have a choice. We can hunker down, go into the bunker in the basement, or we can look for the opportunity. And I found a quote just before you and I started talking this evening. Jonas Salk, who was the doctor that discovered the cure for polio, he said, intuition will take the thinking mind to where it should look next. Intuition will take the thinking mind to where it should look next. Use your intuition. When you get into tough situations, think it through. There's something there. Let your intuition, your gut, whatever you want to call it, speak to you so you see these great opportunities. A couple other thoughts that I had just about turning points. Rosa Parks not giving up her seat on the bus. That spurred the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. And when somebody asked her, why didn't you get up? Were you trying to make a point? She goes, no, I was tired. But other people saw that and sensed it and realized that this is an opportunity now, that we can leverage this event for a total shift in our country. Another one that I had shared with you before, I remember years back watching a series on, it was either the Discovery Channel, I think it was the History Channel, called The Men Who Built America. And Teddy Roosevelt was a thorn in the side of all of the large business owners of the day. back in the turn of the last century. And what they wanted to do was, you know, people like J.P. Morgan and John D. Rockefeller and Vanderbilt wanted to get him out of the way. So they get him out of politics, get him out of the day-to-day running of politics. So they figured the best place for us to put him is on the vice presidential ticket with William McKinley, because a vice president doesn't do anything. So they were power brokers and were able to get him named to be on the ticket with McKinley. What they didn't know was McKinley was going to be assassinated. And all of a sudden, turning point, Teddy Roosevelt is now president and began to break up the monopolies that these men had. So you never know when something is going to be a major turning point for history or perhaps a turning point just for yourself. So We had chatted a little bit before we started recording about some turning points that occurred in your life. Do you want to share any of them or one of them with us maybe from a younger person's perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I told you, I don't think I've had too many monumental turning points in my life yet. But one that was significant was I had switched colleges, and after my first year of school, I changed schools, but that was not the original plan. I mean, I worked really hard to get into the school I went to first, and I really loved it and ended up, I made the decision to switch after my first year. For a handful of reasons, and it was the best decision I could have made, because then it was a Wednesday, so it was my third day of class that I met my husband. So if I had waited even one more semester to make the decision, he wouldn't have been there anymore. So I probably would have never met him. So it was a tough choice, and it was sort of a last-minute decision, but it obviously changed my life, his life. We have our kids, our families, so I think that was like a turning point. But I shared with you before that while I don't have too many of those, I don't have a lot of career shifts relatively young. I do feel like I've been good at seizing opportunities, and that's just as significant here. I mean, I haven't done anything presidential, like the example we gave, but I think it really comes down to in the everyday, like thinking about what opportunities are put in front of you, and like when opportunity knocks, do you answer that or do you listen to your intuition? Do you look at something as an opportunity and think like, I don't deserve that, or it's going to be too difficult, and turn away? I think that's where we all make the mistake of just thinking like, no, I can't do it. And maybe our intuition is really telling us like, yeah, like do it, jump right in. And that's when things can really shift. And you shared some career changes with me that have really led you to where you are now.
Yeah. So, I'll come back to your question, but I wanted to point something out too. So, you know, when you said that you haven't, you know, you made these decisions, but they weren't like, my words, not yours, intense times, you know, like, cause one of my points is the turning points come when there is an intense time of difficulty. You know, when we're younger, we can be moved to a turning point much easier than when we get more older and set in our ways. So I think that there's a lot more opportunity during times of intense difficulty, but we can have a turning point in our life or in our career when we're younger that is just intuition is saying, this might be worth an opportunity here. Take a look. Getting back to what, you know, Jonas Salk said, that intuition will tell the thinking mind where to look next. And so, yeah, I did mention some of my career ones. And, you know, sometimes some of my career moves were kind of out of my control in terms of, you know, when I was an apprentice toolmaker, working in a great tool shop, there was an economic slowdown and I got laid off. And I didn't miss any work, but I went to work in Auburn for a company there was that didn't even have an apprentice program, but they allowed me to set one up and so that I could get certified because they did have a journeyman toolmaker there. But like when I was working at one company in Auburn and things were just difficult. They were, you know, I wasn't enjoying my job. There was somebody there that was just deliberately trying to make my life miserable. And I could have stayed and fought. But my intuition said, no, it's time to move. Just there's something here. Look for it. And I didn't, you know, and I simply heard somebody was looking and I ended up coming back to Syracuse to work, which opened the door for me to go to SelfLock. And most of the folks that listen know that I spent 18 years at SelfLock. But when I got ready to leave SelfLock, now, so here was an interesting one about a turning point. So probably 4 years before I left. Three to four years before I left, the company went through some financial challenges. It was just, it was really tough for us. And, you know, cash flow was tight and I was just really anxious. And I've talked about that on the podcast, but it was in one of those times of intense difficulty when I realized that a friend of mine had given me a book and I had it on the credenza behind my desk. And I picked up the book one day and started reading, and it was John Maxwell's 21 Laws. You know, that point shifted not just my mindset, but my life. I mean, I just, I, you know, people say to me, you know, what's the most important book you've ever written? Well, so other than the Bible, it's the 21 Laws, because it literally changed my outlook on so many different things, and put me on the path I'm on. Now, I will say this, that that was one turning point, but it wasn't the complete turning point. So that was part of the turning point. Maybe the turning point had a couple year process. So yes, it changed who I was as a leader. It changed how I ran the company. It helped change the bottom line of the company, and the company began to regenerate, you know, its growth and its earnings type of thing. But then I had the opportunity to shift, to leave SelfLock and to come to Macne, you know, and that was scary. You know, when you're 54 years old, you're supposed to be looking at how do I maximize my earnings in the next 11 years so I can retire. But that just wasn't what was supposed to happen. And I just felt almost a calling to another turning point or completion of the turning point to do what I'm doing now. And I'm just so thankful that I had the courage, the faith, whatever you want to call it. I believed it was a calling. I think God was telling me to do this. But wow, what a difference. But had I not been willing to see it, I'd have missed it. And I think that's the key that I want people to realize. There's an urgency about turning points. You touched on it. Had you waited a semester, you wouldn't have met Derek. So that's real. You know, I turned down a lot of job offers while I was at SelfLock before I took the one that Randy was making to me four and a half years ago. So actually almost 5 years ago. Wow, it'll be five years ago he made that offer in June. I didn't leave till December. But there were other offers, even offers that Macne, even before Randy, Macne made to me. No, it wasn't right. But this intuition will tell the thinking mind where to look next. And I really want to, I'm so glad that I discovered that quote from Jonas Salk literally just before we started talking this evening. I mean, while I was waiting for you to say you were ready, and we, so what people don't realize is we talk on the phone, but we record on laptops. So I'm waiting for your call or vice versa, or me to call you. And I find that quote and it's so perfect. Your intuition will tell you where to look in this time of intense difficulty, but you have to be willing to look.
So,
and yeah, go ahead.
I kind of want to challenge the intense difficulty part for a second. The more we think about, the more we talk and the more I think about this. Do you think it really always is a time of intense difficulty? Because I think that's also very subjective.
Yes, you're correct.
You know, there are so many things that we go through that we don't really always realize how difficult they were until we're through it.
Absolutely right.
And I think that there can be maybe, you know, moderate difficulty, or
sure,
perhaps it's not so much difficulty, but like a discomfort, like this, an unrest, a period of unrest where you feel like, okay,
yes,
there's something more. Yes. And then you almost are subconsciously seeking out that something more.
Yes. I love the way you put that. Just that it doesn't have, yeah, I forgot the word you used, but just like a discomfort, I think is what you used, right?
Yeah. Discomfort, absolutely. And unrest. Yeah.
Discomfort and unrest. Yes. Perfect. Because I've been trying to think, and sorry for our listeners, I just banged my watch on my table here. So if I think about when I left Self-Lock, that was a really, really hard decision for me to make. But a few months before I left, there was just a little bit of discomfort and unrest. Nothing bad. But I wouldn't have wondered, I wouldn't have even considered the opportunity that Randy gave me had that not been there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would have just quickly dismissed it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it doesn't have to be an intense time of difficulty. I chose that because it fit the quote, mm-hmm. and I think people might be able to appreciate that now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the intense difficulty sharpens our focus. We have two choices. We can either hunker down, you know, get into the bunker, lock ourselves down, get some meals, you know, MREs that we can just add water, kind of thing, or we can use this time to sharpen our focus and look deeply at things. So I think whenever there is a time of intense difficulty, there is a great potential for a turning point. However, you don't need it to have a turning point. I agree with what you said there. Yeah, it could just be discomfort, unsettling, or sometimes just an inner feeling that says there's something more.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all turned down things before when we're like, this is really great, but there's something more for me.
Right. Yes.
And then I'll be ready to make that shift and yes. have the turning point.
Yes.
And again, I think that comes back to intuition and really listening to that and acting accordingly, I guess.
Yeah. You know, your gut's telling you something's just not right here.
Yeah.
You know, and that you know, I'm a person, you know, people know I'm a person of faith, and I believe that God directs everything in our life and gives us, you know, he moves us where he'd like us to be. My point is, I want people to go through life excited about looking at the options and the opportunities that are there.
Mm-hmm.
Not stressing about the problems that are there, because there is no opportunity that doesn't have a risk.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, and the greater the turning point, perhaps I could say, is, you know, the one that might have some huge impact might take a lot of risk. For, you know, David K. Carter, oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But he changed the world, so to speak. So certainly changed the United States of America.
And you know? And sometimes you don't necessarily know, like, the impact that you're going to have immediately, like that. You know, David K. Carter didn't necessarily know the impact that he would have had. And he might have, I mean, I don't know how long he lived or anything like that, but like sometimes it's a legacy decision, especially when you think about like what you're doing at the family level or as a leader, like if you're a business owner preparing to turn things over to the next generation, like,
yep.
It's, you know, I think especially now with social media, like we get so caught up in being like significant, like we need to be like utterly significant, right?
Right.
And like you forget the value that you're adding on in the everyday, whether it be at work or to your family. And like those little investments pay big dividends and you might not see them.
Exactly. Exactly. You might not see them now, you know, and you may never see them, but they still occurred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you were talking about that, I had a gentleman tell me that they had someone leave their organization to go work for another company, and the company where he was working tried to keep him and even tried to give him a 15% raise.
Mm-hmm.
But he left to go somewhere else for a cut in pay because he wanted to spend time with his son.
Mm-hmm.
That's a turning point.
Mm-hmm.
And that son will never forget the extra time that dad's going to have with the son.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about all of the upheaval in the schools right now where, you know, schools are in operation, but the kids aren't there type of thing. And if people don't think schools are in operation, you just talk to some teachers and administrators and see how much schools are still in operation and, mm-hmm. you know, putting packets together to be sent home to kids and meals for kids and so on. But I really think, too, that while I know that there are downsides to this, some serious ones, and some of the concerns, especially for children that are in abusive families, you know, where there's no school to help keep an eye on what's going on. But in others, there's tremendous opportunity for parents to connect with kids on a level that they may not have connected with. You know, one of the things I heard was, it's so amazing when there isn't a practice that I have to take somebody to and there isn't a ball game we have to go to. It's just we spend time together as a family.
Mm-hmm.
What types of legacies, if we want to call it that, will be seeds of that legacy are going to be planted, you know, in the next several weeks.
Yeah.
And have been planted in the last five.
I saw something on, I think it was on Instagram today, and it was like, imagine this. It's 2036 and you're home alone because your kids are off at college and you're in an empty nest, and you'd give anything to be back to 2020 home with your small children with nowhere to be.
Yeah.
Other than together. Right. Something right. along those lines. And I'm like, yes. You know, you don't know what you have until you don't have it anymore. And I think that's like such an important perspective of looking at what we're presented with right now and seizing that opportunity. Like, instead of saying, when are my kids going back to school?
Right.
Teachers need a raise, which is true. Definitely true.
Yep.
But saying like, okay, I'm like this. The likelihood of this happening again is while our kids are kids is low.
Yep.
So finding the opportunity there and your kids will remember.
Exactly. So I think we've done, I'm hoping we did a good job of getting folks to really start looking for that turning point.
Mm-hmm.
And to, just remember, I don't think I can overstress this. There is an urgency about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the opportunity can be gone tomorrow.
Right.
So, you know, we always record this toward the end of the day, but, you know, tomorrow morning, wake up with this excitement, with this energy, with this anticipation of something amazing happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're looking for it, it will.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to ask me what we're talking about next week, and I have no idea.
That's okay.
But I also didn't know that my topic about the turning point would end up with a title, Who is David K. Carter? So who knows?
Yeah. We'll see what opportunity presents itself.
We'll see what opportunity develops between now and next week.
Mm-hmm.
So anything exciting happening at your household?
Let's see. Well, got my wine delivery yesterday, so that's exciting.
Whoa, that's exciting.
Well, it is because, like, we try new wines, you know? Like,
sure.
It's something exciting. I have a piece of furniture coming that's going to require some assembly, so.
That's exciting.
So that's exciting.
Good.
Yeah, that's our, you know, our big weekend plans. Yep.
And there's always the potential of a drive with the family.
Oh, well, that'll definitely happen. We take a drive, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. How about you?
Well, let's see. I'm going to, no, there's nothing exciting, which doesn't mean bad. It's just, I'm going to just try to get some chores done this weekend. I have to do a tune up on my lawn tractor.
Yeah, it's exciting in times like these.
And I got a new, you know, it's the seat was all messed up. So I ordered a new seat. So I'm going to put the new seat on and I'm going to tune it up, do an oil change and all those good things.
Well, that sounds pretty good.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
And we'll see what we talk about next week.
All right.
I'm not sure. So I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.